The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What is going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 549. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Kuwabara, Kuwabara.
Chris Seeley.
What's up, everyone?
Carlos Romero.
Yo, yo, yo.
And Brian Manjoma.
What up, what up?
All right, guys, we are back once again. And we're missing some people. Shout out to Rich. He's actually apparently just landed in Seattle. So he's going to be out there for PAX West or PAX Prime. They still call it PAX Prime, or do they just call it PAX West now?
It's PAX West now.
I like Prime. You know, that was a better name for it.
Well, I mean, it's not really Prime anymore because there's multiple ones.
Yeah. Well, remember, it was called PAX Prime because it was the original, you know?
Yeah,
but I guess
now now they don't do that anymore.
Do they still have PAX South? Remember that was a thing.
They got rid of that.
Uh-oh.
The one in San Antonio?
Yeah, San Antonio.
I wish it was there. I went a couple of times.
Yeah. I was about to say, you went there, you know.
There's also a bunch of other PAXs. There's also another
one. Isn't there one in Australia?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, there's an Australian one. And then there's also what they call, it's not a location, but there's one that happens in Philadelphia called like PAX something or other. It's some other type of PAX.
PAX,
it's weird.
PAX get your shit robbed. Fucking in Philly, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Adam's probably doing TV Terminal or playing Gears without Carlos. You know, that would be
or
very...
me.
Oh, it was
or
up with
me.
It. What's up with that? What's up with
well,
that?
Well, I do... Yo, Carlos, since my cousin is a deadbeat, right? We gonna play this?
We have to. I mean, gotta have something. And speaking of deadbeats, Adam is probably leaving us alone because he's probably playing with his new toy. He just got the MetaQuest. So he's rocking that right now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Chris, I don't know if you were here for the Sunday show, but after Adam showed up after the show, it's already over. And then for like an hour regaled us about the MetaQuest 3, about how much he loves it, which is hilarious because I'm like, everything that you know about VR, it's like new to him. Like, oh, you can have multiple monitors. I'm like, that's not anything new, but you know, he's excited about it. But he did bring up a good point because I was like, Adam, how come you were never in? You never seem interested in stuff. Why'd you get it? And then he said something we've been saying for a long time. He's like, I didn't get it until I tried it because you can't. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to sell VR, you know.
Yeah.
Then I told him about some of Torrance's adventures in VR, but I can't talk about those on the podcast.
oh, no.
Torrance plays a lot of adult games in VR, if you get my meaning. Oh, man. So, yeah, and then Brett, you know, who knows what's going on with Brett. Maybe he's resting because, you know, he's still recuperating, you know, but you never know. He may show up. So, yeah, interesting weekend gaming. I wouldn't say anything crazy happened. But some stuff happened. But the first one is, as we were already talking about, Gears of War. It is on PlayStation. The official PlayStation Twitter tweeted that out. It's like, reload, let's go. I'm like, oh shit, Roadie Run 2? You know, for anyone here who has played Gears of War on PS5, do you have any impressions?
I mean, I played Gears of War on the Xbox 360, but yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like Gears of War. I mean, it's what else can I say? I mean, though, playing it now does, you know, remind me of how brisk some of those older games are.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
like you know, as soon as like they give you a little bit of like two cinematics, like, you know, two shorts, like a trailer like cinematic, and they give you a little bit of a history thing, and then they bust into the jail and they get marked. That's it. You
know, and it's like right off the bat. And there's no bullshit upgrade tree or any of that stuff. All your abilities, you have them right there from the beginning. No bullshit. You know, because my thing is like I first played Gears of War in like 2015, so I played it 10 years after the fact. And Manny, what you just said is the same reaction I had. I'm like, damn, we're just getting right into this shit. I missed this.
Yeah,
I beat that game in like 8 hours, and then I replayed it five more times because again, it's short enough where you could just replay it. Because again, I haven't played Gears of War on PS5 yet, but the first one is so good. I played. The only Gears I haven't played is what's that one everyone hates?
The last one.
No, not that one. Which one, Carlos? The one with R.
Judgment.
Yeah, it's Judgment and Five. But I played the original trilogy. Original trilogy is dope. Gears 4, you know, all right. But that first one to me, man, that's the one, man. Like, because it still has that kind of like horror element to it as well, because you know, if you read those interviews with Cliff Baczynski, it said one of the big inspirations was Resident Evil 4, you know, so you could feel some of that in there, but obviously it's its own thing. When I played Gears of War, and it's funny because I said this in like a, they did, I think it was I forgot what publication it was, Rolling Stone, it was Rolling Stone, but they had like a gaming outlet. So they interviewed a bunch of people and journalists about the first Gears of War. And during the interview, I said what I felt when I first booted up the game. And ironically enough, they put my fucking quote, me, before even the developers. When I played that game for the first time, bro, I was like, yo, this shit is like the Predator handshake scene in video game form. You know, the manliest shit possible. And you know, that's another thing that sticks out with this game. Obviously we don't get games like this anymore where it's like a celebration of manliness and shit, you know, instead of these fucking pussies in games now. So that's dope. Big beefy dude, which is fucking aliens up. Great stuff, man. You know, like again, I have to play on PS5, but I played the Ultimate Edition, which is, this is basically that, I believe, with, you know, more enhancements obviously since it's been 10 years, but I'm glad it's on play. I've always said Gears of War is the perfect PlayStation game, right? Think about it like this, and the developers have said this too, right? One of the biggest games, you know, on PlayStation is Uncharted. Uncharted, I said, yep, we were inspired by Gears of War. We love that, you know, the whole, you know, hiding behind cover shit, you know? So there's already there. And then, you know, story-driven as well. Not like super narrative, but it is driven by the story. It is a perfect fit for PlayStation, you know? I guess we'll have to wait and see how well it does in terms of sales. Too early to tell at this moment, but I suspect it's going to be a big hit, you know? But yeah, Manny, continue. What else did you think of what you played?
I mean, it does, it's like, you know, because I've only ever played the original version of Gears of War, so it was interesting seeing all the stuff that they did for that second update that they did to the game.
Yeah, the one so, I played,
like, this. Yeah, this, you know, compared, like, you know, the Gears of War was also one of those games that suffered from the, you know, the era of being monochromatic.
Oh, yes.
So where everything's sort of like, you know, sort of like monochromatic colored. So this one is like a more like colorful version of it. But I kind of weirdly wanted it to have, and, you know, I've also been playing Metal Gear Solid Delta, to have like a flashback, like a
filter,
like,
yeah.
Palette. Yeah, flashback filter to kind of go back to that kind of a little bit like that, just like Metal Gear has that legacy look.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah, that would have been nice. It
was interesting seeing all the, like, places that are all, like, re-arted and, like, there's more detail and everything. You know, Marcus and Dom and all that stuff. One weird thing I noticed in this one, this is from the previous, like, the cinematics are actually in a different frame rate than the actual game. I think that they're pre-rendered, which was common at that, which was sort of common at that era. But it's weird that they didn't, like, you know, for that that previous remaster, they didn't just, you know, put all the cinematics in, like, full resolution. So they exported everything at high resolution, but they didn't do it at 60 frames per second like the rest of the game. So it's weird. It's a little weird, but, you know, it's not a big deal. We, you know, from that era, we've all seen a lot of games that have, like, run into 60, and then they have a cinematic that runs
30. Yeah. No, you're right about that. I remember the first game I remember that did that, that I experienced. I'm not saying this is the first game I did it. Just the first one I experienced was Dead or Alive 2 on Dreamcast. Game was 60 frames, but the cinemas were 30. You know, it was like, what the fuck? And you're right, man. That was very indicative for a while of games doing that.
Yeah.
And even now you could kind of tell, you're like, wait a minute, this is a cinematic, man. Or this is a video, you know? Because it's not only the frame rate, but the video quality looks off, you know?
Yeah. This one, the video quality is, like, it looks like they went in and they re-exported everything in, like, HD.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, like, at least in a higher, better resolution, so it looks nicer. But, yeah, definitely the frame rate is a little bit weird to me. But, you know, again, I'm
it's sort of that also era.
Used to that. Sort of that era, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The you know, I admire the collectibles thing in that game, where, in other words, you can you know, it literally gives you a sign as to the location, as to close to where those little cog things are, and the little dog tags that you can find of the different gears that have died. But what it unlocks is a little bit boring. I'm not sure if it's the same for all the other ones. I know that in the original game it didn't really unlock anything, but in this one it unlocks like comic books, like you could read like prequel comics that they had made, I think.
Yes, you're right, because I do remember unlocking that in the Ultimate Edition. I do remember that, reading that stuff. Yes. Hold on, shout outs real quick here. So going on, a Syrian Air Force, Magnum TV, and Mary Out, it looks like. Shout out to all you guys. Carlos, did you get to play Gears on PS5 yet?
No, not yet. But it's definitely going to be in the queue for this next month for sure.
Carlos did suggest putting that on as a throwdown game night thing.
Yeah, I did.
To do it.
I did. But the thing that sucks, it's only 2-player co-op.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought it was like, oh, all of us can play, you know.
Well, so, it was not, but, I mean, to be honest, wasn't it always 2-player co-op in the original Gears?
Yeah, but I thought for some reason this game, I don't know why I thought about this, oh, maybe this, you know, it's modern times, and maybe they'll make it 4-player co-op for some reason.
I wonder if that may have broken the game. Who knows? Did the other games have 4-player co-op, or was it always 2?
I think for the first couple, members. It was... Yeah, because I think the more recent ones have been 4-player.
Yeah, maybe that's what you're thinking about.
They're at least 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, good stuff. Here's the thing, though. Apparently, there's some issues on PC.
Oh.
Yeah, which is interesting because I don't remember there being issues with Ultimate Edition on PC. I also played Ultimate Edition on PC, and it was fine. You know, 10 years ago, it was fine. Wait a minute. What engine is this shit running on?
Unreal Engine.
Which Unreal?
3.
On PC right now, the current one?
Yes.
Really?
Because I was like,
because I was wondering if it's a culprit. You know what I'm talking about? Unreal Engine 5. Oh. I wonder if it strikes again.
No, it's not. No, they didn't. They actually didn't up the game to a current version of Unreal. It's actually running on Unreal Engine 3.
Let me look that up, because that's
like a modified version of it. I think Digital Foundry actually did a little bit about it. They said that it's running on Unreal Engine 3, and it's a version that they derived from a PlayStation 4 version they had in development at some point.
Interesting. Yeah, so that is weird.
So they said how they got it to run on this one is they literally dug up an old PlayStation 4 version that they had in development, and then worked from there to essentially develop this thing. So yeah, it's actually an Unreal Engine 3 game.
That's great. Yeah, it says right here, custom evolved Unreal Engine 3. Because I was wondering if our friend Unreal Engine 5 struck again.
I'm sure there's another game that we could talk about that has a Unreal
Engine you know 5 what? Things. Yeah, we could talk about it because I'll bring it up later. I don't have it in the show notes, but it is good bringing it up because when Rich and I reviewed Metal Gear Solid on this podcast, we didn't bring a performance at all because to us it wasn't an issue. But obviously, Digital Foundry did their video And now that's all people are talking about. But we'll get to that in a bit. What's up?
Just real quick with Gears, it looks like it's using Unreal 3 Evolved, and it looks like Unreal it looks like Unreal 3 Evolved to the Unreal 5 issues.
There you go. Shout out to Rich.
So I actually did experience an issue, but I don't know what caused it. So at one point, and this is in the beginning of the game started to like weirdly freeze. And then I couldn't press the X and B button, but the game would still be running. So it's like it would freeze and then something would happen and then it would freeze again. And then I saw a message from the PlayStation 5 saying that the X and B crashed.
Interesting.
And it but yet Gears of War was still running.
Yeah. So Manny, so when you say the X and B, you mean the pop-up menu from the PlayStation,
the,
right?
The PlayStation UI. That totally crashed in the background while I was playing the game. So it was causing all these weird lags. And then eventually it worked itself out. And then I saw a message that said, XMB error had to recover. So it was like recovering while I was playing the game. It was weird.
Yeah. This might be a covert, thing by Phil Spencer. This is the Trojan horse. He's breaking down PlayStation.
That's it, man.
Yes. So yeah, that was the one issue that I did, but I've only played up to like where you have to, it's like that second area of the first area where you gotta like you're near that giant statue in the center of the room and a bunch of those emergent points appear around you to throw a bunch of enemies at you. And it's not super far into the
game. Yeah. But yeah, it seems that, here's what it says from the Gears community. The team is investigating crashes on Steam when launching a game and missing pre-order character skins for some users, as well as initial reports of matchmaking issues.
Uh-oh.
Not looking good. Yes.
There was a pre-order skin? I mean, I pre-ordered it on Amazon. I didn't get no pre-order shit.
Yeah. Pre-order skin as in four skin? let's see. What are the issues here? What was that thing that they said it for? It's like Foreskin or something. And people are like, wait, what?
Oh, Fantastic or Fantastic Four.
Yeah, Fantastic Four, like skins.
Fantastic Four skins.
Yeah, that's what it was. It's like, wait, Fantastic what skins? Oh, man.
Someone did not think that one through.
No, they probably had AI do it. But yeah, Xbox is investigating. They'll see what happens. But I haven't seen anyone talk about like the game running bad on like consoles. Correct me if I'm wrong about that. Actually, I can't be wrong. I just don't know. I don't know. Surprisingly, Carlos, I've not seen a lot of chatter about this game other than the usual console shit, you know?
Well, just to correct you, Tony, there have been reports on issues on consoles. We just got it like 5 minutes ago by Manny.
I'm talking about, that's true. I said on Twitter, though, you know? Run the tape back. I didn't say on Twitter.
Yeah, those people don't matter. Only I matter.
Yeah.
Twitter people don't matter.
Yeah,
Manny, you're not as loud as them.
Yeah, right?
You got screen.
You haven't seen anything, Carlos? Like,
why the fuck is...
Well, I'm wondering, because, the chat has been even more quiet about Gears. I was expecting the Discord...
Yeah.
To be more popping about this, but
aren't you motherfuckers playing it?
I've been surprised. So that's the population that I'm gauging more for.
Yeah,
these types of things, and I'm surprised. I'm kind of a little bit disappointed, if I'm being honest.
Yeah,
you guys, come on.
Yeah,
Kishak, like, where you at?
Yeah, Kishak. Jay Shep. Where you guys at? I know he's not gonna play this shit. He's playing Nintendo. He's chilling.
Dumek is playing Donkey Kong for the 10th time.
That's it. Banana. Banana. Let's go, son.
But I'm too nervous to sing.
Bitch, you better sing. I always yell at her too. Bitch, you really again with this shit? Better sing. We got to move to the next level.
we got to go down. Yo, there. By the way, just real quick, there's a lot of power ups in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm like, whoa, another one?
Another one? Yo, I'm an ostrich now. Excuse me.
I'm a donkey.
Yeah, I'm a donkey. Yeah, game's fun, man. So I don't blame Tomeka. But yeah, no, I didn't think about that. You're right. You know, because obviously before every Thursday show, I always scroll through the timeline, you know, since Monday, seeing what's up. No one's talking about Gears in the Discord. To quote Richard Bailey Jr., very interesting.
This is very interesting.
Are they talking about Metal Gear, though?
They're not.
No.
What?
They're not talking about that either.
What's wrong with
y'all? They're not talking about no Gears talk of any kind. No Gears of War, no Metal Gears.
No Gears at all, man. Your boy Astrobot and Ape Escape is in that game.
Mm-hmm. Gears. Yeah. You know what? That's a good segue. Let's talk about Metal Gear, man. Because obviously Digital Foundry did their thing. And the big talk of the town is performance issues, right? Now, the reason Rich and I didn't mention that in our review is because it wasn't noticeable enough for us, right? I believe he also played on PS5. I only noticed it, and this was not all the time, sometimes when a cutscene was starting. That's when I was like, oh,
yeah.
I'm like, the frame rate dipped a little bit. That's kind of interesting.
You get a little hitch.
Yeah. But it wasn't enough. Like, it never happened during the actual game. Like, I know they were showing some crazy fucked up scenes of, like, action scenes. And, like, the frame rate just dips and shit. I didn't have that happen to me. Like, even during the big stuff. Like, I would have thought it would have happened during that chase near the end and shit, where like you're just, you know, the soldiers coming at you and the bikes and everything. I'm talking about a 20-year-old game, people, deal with it, you know, like, or shit like that. But no, I only saw it when some cutscenes started. I'm like, eh, it's kind of weird, but it wasn't enough to take me out of the game, you know, because it wasn't happening during the fucking game, which is kind of wild. And then they also said that the game didn't look as sharp on PS5 Pro compared to PS5 in some instances. It looked fine to me, but, you know, they could be right about that. You know, their video side by side was pretty convincing, you know?
They're also pixel counting, too. It's like they're all, like, right up close to, like, you know, looking at it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, but I feel like...
go ahead.
I feel like the thing about Digital Foundry, as important as they are to, you know, for people to know these things, I also think that they also get people after seeing one of their videos, it gets people into a phase where they start to think games are awful. Like the way they run. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, okay, like you see, like, again, from what I've played on what you've played, we haven't experienced any of the things that they have seen.
Like, I beat the whole game.
Yeah.
You know? And,
exactly. Yeah. I made it up to Revolver Ocelot initially when I played it at the Metal Gear event in New York.
Yeah.
So it's like I didn't experience like these insane hitches and all kinds of other crazy things. You know, nothing more than normal, to be honest. Like, the original game had way more issues than this one. Like, that game barely could hit 30 at times, you know?
Yeah.
And it was all over the place with their unlocked frame rate on that game.
Yeah. And this game, unlike Gears of War, doesn't have any, like, pre-shot video. Everything's in-engine, you know, running the way it's supposed to.
Other than those portions of the game where they're, you know.
Oh, yeah, the crew chef and shit like that. Yes, yes.
Yeah, the briefing stuff. Yeah, the, you know, the audio plays as they are. But, yeah, those things, those are still video. But other than that, I mean, I wouldn't say that those games are awful. And I played the first, when I first played it, it was actually on a PC. I played it on one of the.
Oh, you played Delta, yeah.
Yeah, when I played Delta, I played it originally on the event. I played it because the backstage area of, like, for you know, for media, was they all had high end PCs that they could play on, and then the main area had PlayStation, Xboxes.
So I could only speak to PS5 Pro performance, but again, I only noticed some dips. But like when cutscenes were starting, and even that was rare. I'm like, oh, it was rare because it would always like, oh, that's kind of interesting, but never happened in the game. But, you know, kind of adding to your point about what you said about Digital Foundry, I the way I see it is like they kind of get some gamers to focus on the wrong thing, right? Not the wrong thing, to make one aspect the narrative. That's I think that's a better way of putting it, right? Yeah. And it's because annoying. And now it's got to a point, Manny, where after that video dropped, I stopped talking about this game because I know what's going to happen. I'll talk about the game.
Oh, it runs like shit.
And then I'll reply with, and I would have been justified in replying with this. Have you played it yet? You know, before it came out. No, but Digital Foundry said, you know. Again, I'm not taking anything away from Digital Foundry. I really think they do great work. I've been praising these guys forever, so I'm not getting mad because they're talking about Metal Gear. My thing is, like, they can't. This is an instance where, yes, they can direct attention and focus on, and then make the community. They're not making a community. The community will then focus on something and overlook other aspects of a game, you know?
Yeah. So it's what is it? Another good example of the same situation is the way Donkey Kong runs, right? So there was they even said this on one of their little podcasts where they were they were talking about games that they liked. And then apparently people were surprised that Lineman liked Donkey Kong, despite the issues that he had with all the frame rates and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, he's like, the thing about doing the videos that they do is that it sort of shifts things in a certain direction. They may like a game, you know, that has all these issues, but because of them talking about these issues, it almost seems like they don't like the game at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that way. Yeah, no, Donkey Kong's another good example. That game does have I'm not going to say glaring, because glaring would make it seem like the game's bad. A very obvious performance, but it never hurt the experience for me. And that, Carlos, I think you might agree with that, you know?
Oh, yeah. It definitely has performance hiccups, a lot of them.
But it didn't fuck up the experience for you, you know?
Not at all. Yep.
Because it always seemed to happen during, like, a moment where you kind of would feel it would slow down anyway. You know what I mean? It's like it always happens.
You're going ham on the...
Yeah, when you're going ham, you know? I understand that, you know, you want a game to run well all the time. Absolutely get that, you know? And I'm not going to begrudge you if you say performance dips. Wait. This went down from 60 to 50? Unacceptable. You know, I know that sounds rigorous, but I'm not going to blame you for that. You know, you want your shit to perform well, you know, but yeah, it is. You also have to consider that sometimes it may not get in the way, you know. There are times where it absolutely does. But in Metal Gear's case and Donkey Kong's case, it doesn't detract from the overall experience. You know, Donkey Kong is very obvious. Metal Gear, again, I've always saw it when transitioning into some cutscenes. I never saw it in the actual game itself.
I mean, even Elden Ring had some performance issues.
Yeah. Did that stop us from talking about this game as potential game of the generation? No. You know? Yeah. By the way, I was talking to Carlos this week, and I think even though, yes, Elden Ring is also on PS4, I think I'm going to graduate it to a current-gen game. You know?
Breaking news.
Because it's like, think about it, this generation has just been so shitty. You know, and that game is, and it's obviously one of the best games ever. Let's just give it that accolade, you know. And while we're at it, I'm doing the same with Cyberpunk as well. You know, even though with Cyberpunk, I have more data for that because it couldn't run on last gen. You know, so I'm like, I'm justified with that one, brother. You know, so yeah, I'm elevating those to current gen games. So I can at least say Game of the Generation, Elden Ring, or Cyberpunk, you know?
Well, you heard it here first, folks. It's the science is settled. The E3 committee has adjourned.
The E3 committee.
Elden Ring is officially a PS5 game.
There you go. shout out to Jeffrey Wilson in the chat. Jeffrey, I know you know about the E3 committee, brother. He goes, the Donkey Kong performance issues are like the slowdown in an old school space shooter. Some obvious struggle, but doesn't attract. Yep, exactly. And remember when you were playing those old space shooters and shit, when it slowed down, it felt epic. You know, well, I'm not using that as an excuse, but it's like, you know, it felt like they knew where that shit was going to happen, you know?
So, Tony, I don't know if you consider this old, but Mass Effect, the original one, exactly had that same thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Where it was slowed down during the epic shit, you know. But it was because of performance issues. Like, fuck.
That game was pretty bad.
Yeah, man. Don't worry, Elden Ring will be on original Switch. That'd be hilarious. I heard it actually can't run very well on Switch too. You know? Elden Ring's for life, man. Like, I still think about that game, bro. Like, I'll just have random things just pop up. Oh, yeah. Like, where was the game from? Oh, yeah, it's Elden Ring. Like, that happens all the time. That's how you know a game is good.
I'm still disappointed that Night Rain wasn't an Elden Ring DLC, man. I was like, we got Shadow of the Erdtree Tree and Night Rain?
Excuse me?
Nope.
But no.
That would have been.
It was something else. Night Rain was not what we expected. When I heard that shit, I'm like, wait, what? Fortnite? I mean, basically, that's what it is. You know, everything's closing in on you and shit. Like, nah, son. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is going to be like that, too. The Switch 2 exclusive, you know? Blood something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bloodborne one.
Yeah, the Bloodborne one.
The same thing.
Dark Bloods, I believe. I'm just dropping it. What's going on, Reggie? I'm just dropping in to say cheers to the GOAT. His art is everywhere now. Yeah, man, he's talking about you, man. Manny, Reggie, it's funny you say that when Manny has to go away. But when I was reading that, when you said, you know, pay respect to the GOAT, I thought you were talking about me. I appreciate that, man. Thank you. I knew there was blood in there, you know. Shout out to Reggie, man. There he is. Hey, Manny, while you were gone, Reggie popped up in the chat saying that he only came here to the chat to give respect to the GOAT, you, for your amazing art. Yeah, you're muted.
Wait, whoa. What prompted this?
Well, all that cool stuff you were posting during Metal Gear Con, you know?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of fun stuff that we had. So, good stuff. If you guys want to know, I mean, I'm not sure if we have a segment for that, but
I could squeeze it in.
We could also put it on the question show.
Nah, we'll do it tonight. We're doing it live. All right, man, let's move on to the next story here. July 2025 apparently was not a good month for video game sales in the U.S., hardware specifically. Everybody was down except for Switch 2, which is the big winner. But let's read this from Push Square. After a very good month of USA sales in June 2025, PS5 slumped to a bit of a stinker in July 2025, registering a 47% decline in dollar sales over the year. Remember, this precedes this month's... Okay, they're making fancy. This happened before the price increase, which is crazy. Xbox took a big hit because of the price increase. And Chris, your favorite, the original Switch was down 52%.
Oh, sure. I mean, you have a new system. The problem with Sony and Microsoft was foolish with the price hike. Oh, we'll just do that too. Mm-hmm. Oh, what do you got to offer? You jacked up the system is years old already. You jacked up the price, and what games are coming out? Oh, wait, you just canceled a whole bunch of games and fired a whole bunch of people. Not a good look. And with Sony, it's like your next exclusive doesn't come out till October. And you know, Nintendo launches a new system with some games. Yeah, they're gonna take your lunch. So. You're not offering anything. This is why. And then wait till the August numbers come out, this price hike. You're going to have even more people jumping ship because you have more options now. I mean, not just the Switch. It's like, go get yourself a Steam Deck, an RG Ally. It's just more cost effective, right? At the end of the day.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right about this. So everything's down except for Switch 2, obviously. Then, you know, when it comes, because basically it's from Circana, they're basically like, you know, the ones that handle all this stuff now, and PDs, you know, same guys too, Matt Pizzicatella. So I'll read the top 10 games that sold the best last month. The first two are EA games, EA Sports College Football. It's the number one game, and EA Sports MVP bundle. What is that? Bundle for what?
Oh, no, I don't know about that, but yeah, college football game is pretty freaking popular.
Just crazy. All right, number three, Carlos Banana, you know?
Ooh, Banana.
Number four, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4. Number five, Call of Duty. Number six, Minecraft. Number seven, Forza Horizon 5. You know that's on PS5. They're buying that shit. Mm-hmm. Grounded 2,
yep.
Number 8.
Oh.
And the last two games that for the top 10 of these are both Rockstar games.
Remember
Brian, Rockstar? Get ready. Yeah, Brian, get ready. So number 9, Red Dead Redemption 2. And then, Brian, guess what number 10 is?
Let me guess. Table tennis.
Yes. Yep. Oh, man. People are still buying GTA 5. Nuts, man. Death Stranding is number 12 here. But it was not a new game at that point. Elden Ring's on this shit. Number 14. Excuse me? Who's Carlos? Elden Ring's on here twice. Night Rain was number 16.
Oh.
Spider-Man 2 is on this shit. Number 19. That didn't get re-released, though, did it? It's just...
I don't think so.
Was it on PC, maybe? Or is it... No. That's been out on PC. What am I talking about?
Yeah, that was the start of the year.
Yeah. That's been out.
Number 2 came out the start of the year on PC.
Yeah, it did. Okay, ooh. So maybe that's where it's selling. I was just asking. It didn't come out in July. I'm like, that's been out. And then rounding things off here is F125 for you racing fans in Europe. And then if you look at the top 10 on PlayStation specifically, it's mostly the same. I love how Forza's number 6 on this shit. But Death Stranding's a lot higher here is number 5. But the number 1, 2, 3, and 4 are the same as top 10. You know, EA Sports, the Sports Bundle, Tony Hawk, and Call of Duty. But GTA 5 is higher on this one. Number 8, it's crazy, man. All right, let's move on here, unless you guys have anything else you want to add to that. All right, so apparently Nintendo's still not giving developers Switch 2 development units. Chris, what the fuck's going on here, bro?
Well, I can only imagine they're just prioritizing their favorite third-party developers. What people realize, like, yeah, you could request a dev unit from them, but Nintendo has favored publishers, has favorite developers, people they want to work with, and then everyone else just gets scraps. Like, this happened with the Wii, this happened with the Wii U, this happened with the Switch. They favor Japanese studios first, and then they'll hit up bigger Western studios where they've had high return on investment, right? Like, they're looking for third parties that sell well and then push system. That's who they give dev kit first, right? And they keep track of all that. So if you're an indie developer, whatever, it's good luck. Maybe 2 years from now, you'll get one, right? Shit. And it's a shame, right? Because they get told, like, oh, why don't you just develop it for Switch 1. We'll give you a Switch dev kit and then hope that it works, right?
Wow.
And hope that the backwards compatibility works. I guarantee that's the messaging to the developers who are saying, hey, I've put in requests. Nobody's answering me. We can't get anything. And then they'll say, oh, we'll just give you a Switch dev kit. Or go get one and, you know, we'll hope that it's backwards compatible. That's because they don't care. And that's the unfortunate part of their kind of hubris is that hubris. And then they also have a nationalistic preference. Like,
yeah,
I've talked about this on previous shows. Support for third-party developers, especially if you're a Western developer and there's a language barrier, is very poor from Nintendo. They take forever to get back to you. There has to be translations, and they just hate doing it. Like, that's why they work well with Capcom or Konami or, you know, Tecmo, because they're Japanese, right? So there's no language barrier, and Nintendo obviously favors their second-party studios. They'll help Intelligent Systems. They'll help, you know, Level 5. They'll, you know, immediately. But everyone else, unless you are a big seller on there in a Western studio, you will not only not get good support. Like, you can forget about getting a dev kit anytime soon, right? And it makes it hard. It's like, it's this barrier. It's like an exclusive club, and they treat people like that. I don't agree with it. Like, I think, hey, don't you want more out there so that people make more exclusive stuff, or maybe you could get more timed exclusives? That, to me, would be a better strategy. But this works for them. They haven't been punished for this strategy, and so they're not going to stop.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Nintendo, man, always, you know, is anyone surprised by that? Because I'm not, the way they are. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, yeah, I don't know, because who is buying a lot? I mean, yeah, no, I guess people do buy indie games on Nintendo, so it's only really going to hurt them. But again, like you said, Chris, they don't care.
They don't care.
Yeah.
That's the problem. So, I mean, I know Digital Foundry probably interviewed these guys.
Yeah.
They don't understand. Or you don't understand. They don't care, right? Like, you think they care, right? They want the business, right? It's like, oh, we have a pretty good title. We've had good numbers on PlayStation or Steam.
Yeah.
And it's a shame.
Yeah, and that's where the story comes from. John Linneman was at Gamescom, and that's what developers telling him. It's like, Nintendo won't give them development kits no matter how much they ask. It's crazy shit. And you're right, the Digital Foundry guys were like, wait, what? How does this make any sense? They don't understand Nintendo. That's what it is, man. They're trying to think of Nintendo as thinking rationally. Nintendo doesn't. They just do whatever is best for them, and they everything else be damned.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's move on now. This next story... you know, rumor, please keep that in mind. And usually I do not talk about rumors that come from YouTubers, but in this case, this YouTuber has a pretty good track record, usually in a tech space, not really in the gaming space, but this is both of them, so, you know, we're going with it. Apparently, according to Moore's Law is Dead, he has a pretty good track record with stuff. Not flawless, obviously, but better than some of these yucksters on the gaming side, you know, like Jeff Grubb and shit.
It's kind of like Moore's Law.
Yeah, it's kind of like Moore's Law, exactly, you know. I love that name. It's like, yeah, Moore's Law is Dead. I don't know about that, you know, in real life. But anyway, but the YouTuber, cool dude. So apparently there will be a handheld version of the PS6, and it's going to have a docked mode like the Nintendo Switch 2. So that would be interesting. But again, this is just a rumor. So I'm like, wait, are we getting two versions? Like, and apparently in docked mode, it's going to be as powerful or maybe slightly more powerful than a PS5.
So there's going to be a main unit and then a handheld version of it.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
So yeah, so essentially they're going to get people to. It sounded like they want to get people to buy consoles twice.
Kind of, yeah. It's like, hey, you have one that's really powerful on your home for your home, and then there's another one that you take on the go.
It's an interesting idea. I mean, it's like if you take the idea of the PlayStation Portal. And made the PlayStation Portal, gave the PlayStation Portal the ability to actually play some fucking games.
Yeah.
As opposed to just do streaming garbage.
I just thought about this now as I'm talking about the story. My worry is if this is true, you could consider this PlayStation's version of the Xbox Series S. That would be a problem when it comes to game development for the PS6.
Yes.
So
yeah, that would
Again, the article doesn't even talk about that. I just thought about that. Now, wait a minute. This is not good. You know, it's like if you're gonna have a lower spec version of the PS6, then you have to at least make games that run for this shit. So you're probably gonna have Xbox Series S problems, which we've discussed all generation on this podcast. Interesting idea, but
it definitely creates a sort of a rabbit hole for these titles where it's like, okay, now you're not trying to hit these other marks. You're gonna have to have all these different SKUs, and that was always the issue with the other thing. But the kind of somewhat of a blessing is the fact that it's a different form factor, but it's also like a different, it's a total different form factor from the thing. It's not even like it could be a TV console, but it also is a handheld. So it's like if Nintendo decided to make another version of the Switch that actually could play legitimately, you know, like have good performance games.
Yeah.
But man, that's going to probably be by the way, fucking.
I scroll down. There's actually more.
Uh-oh.
Rumor. There might be a third option here. And this one actually would be a Series S equivalent. I don't know, man. If this is true, that's too many systems. I can understand. I can understand having one that's like a dedicated home console and then a portable one, right? But then you have a weaker home console. PlayStation, you saw... Here's the problem. I was about to say, look how well that worked out for Xbox. I was going to say that negative way. But the Xbox Series S is probably the best-selling Xbox.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the lowdown on this.
Yo, Carlos, I don't like this, bro.
Well, I don't like it either. but I understand why, and we're not going to like it.
But better why?
We had the conversation last show about how Xbox is doing, is going to probably do a PC console type thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like the most explicit version of it. And that's going to be over $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
And then Brett was talking about, well, they need the entry level. You know, they need something that's not as expensive. And that's where I mentioned, that's where the handheld comes up. That's the quote-unquote low-end Xbox that people can get to play all the games that they want to play. PlayStation is, like, seeing all of this happening. And obviously, the handheld craze is you know, on it's up here. And running.
Yeah.
You know, it's here. It's everyone's doing it. Asus, Lenovo, all, you know, mm-hmm. Steam. All of them.
MSI, everybody, and, yeah.
Yep, all of them. And, you know, their competitors, their direct competitors, the Nintendo Switch and Xbox are doing it. So what they're thinking is, well, we're going to do the same thing. And we're going to release a handheld console. And it's going to be dockable so you can play it on your TV. And you can take it anywhere. You can play it on your rooftop parties.
Okay.
And it's going to cost probably like around $600 to $700. And here's a kicker. This is why they're so excited to do this, because they want to release the PS6, the big console that's going to look like a G6 router or something like that. Whatever the routers look these days, and it's going to be close, if not over $1,000. That's how people are going to swallow that pill.
Fuck! No, you're right. Shit.
And it's not going to have load times, according to Mark Cerny.
Nah.
We'll see.
These load times are very... I don't like this. That's exactly what they're going to do, bro. We're going to sell you beefy one for over $1,000, probably $1,400. I'm saying it right now. You know, gaming laptop prices, basically. And then, but if you don't want that, we have another system for you.
Yes, exactly. That there you go.
It's called the PlayStation 6S. Oh man,
don't folks got rooftops?
You know, fucking Don Matrick, man. Oh God, I don't like this, bro. We can't game anymore, man. It's over. Your favorite hobby too expensive. Just like you know, Manny, you were talking about early on Twitter this week about how, you know, they've priced out the regular man from movies. They're doing that with games.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's it. The thing about it is the thing about film and the thing about games, like, at least, you know, it's the regular person's entertainment. And now it's becoming this sort of high-end, like seen as, quote-unquote, with giant quotes on the side, high-end.
Yeah,
and I feel like it's like high end is when you buy a PC. But if you're buying a normal television, you shouldn't be paying so much money. And I feel like, and you know, when you see these guys, like, you know, now PlayStation's playing this stupid ass game. Oh, we're gonna raise the price of a. Well, how old is the five now? A 5-6 year old console.
It's about to be 5 years. Yeah, 5 years.
5-year-old console, you're raising the price of, you gotta be fucking crazy.
Yeah, they're insane.
Seriously.
And I've heard, you know, we're hearing rumors that the prices may go up again. Listen, I still think they're full of shit, man. Like, not in terms of, you know, I don't believe they're gonna raise the price. I think they probably will, you know, because they know, like, oh, we got this perfect excuse.
How do you
the tariffs? Profits, motherfuckers.
How do you go from, oh, we have a really good stock of PlayStation 5s to, oh, the current climate.
Oh, the current climate. We gotta raise the price. Current economic conditions.
They gotta pay off for Concord some way.
You know? Fuck.
Oh, man.
Well, yeah, that's a good segue for our next story.
You go for, like, oh, it'll be fine. The dental, oh, we have to raise the price. It's like, no. We said this before. We said it. As soon as they got the okay, essentially the excuse of saying, oh, hey, it's this tariff that's going to cause all these issues, right? Now we're going to raise the prices. Now we got our chance to bump a price on an old-ass console.
It's insane.
Yeah. Man. If I will say another thing. If the rumor is true that is mentioned, that Tony mentioned with this article about having an Xbox Series X SS equivalent, then I believe that'll be sub 1,000,
yeah.
But it'll be probably PS5 Pro ish prices.
Bullshit, Mr. Davis.
Yeah. And the handheld might be like 500 to 600. somewhere around there.
It's going to cost more than that. It's going to be more than that. Because current handhelds cost more than that, you know?
That is true.
So so a future handheld is going to cost more than that, you know? Man, we're fucked, bro. Shit is crazy.
And it's got all that R&D for the ear technology. And it's going to be nuts.
That's right, you know? Man, if you're paying that kind of money, our Barstory better come to your crib and measure your ear himself, you know?
Man, you better clean them.
You better clean them too while you're there, motherfucker. Oh, man. All right. Speaking about, you know, Concord. So in a new interview with Riku's favorite developer or, you know, executive, Herman Hulst, they said that Sony is now going to focus much more rigorous and be more rigorous about testing games. Maybe you should have done that beforehand, bruh. So let me read this real quick from IGN. After a high-profile failure in Concord and a high-profile success in Astrobot last year, PlayStation is looking to adjust its strategy to incorporate fewer live service games, more big franchises, and stricter oversight of its own studios. In an interview with Financial Times, PlayStation CEO Herman Hulst says the company is looking to mitigate future big, expensive risks with future games. And this is, quote, I don't want teams to always play safe, but I would like for us, when we fail, to fail early and cheaply. But again, you wouldn't have gotten into this problem if you had more oversight of the shit you were approving, you know? Like, I'm pretty sure there must have been somebody at some point in, you know, Concord's development was like, yo, this is stupid, you know? But the higher-ups like, no, this is fine. You know, we got to hit these quotas. It checks the marks, you know? And now look what happened. Now we got to pay extra for these consoles. I'm saying it, bro. Fuck that, you know? So the cost.
Jim Ryan's legacy.
It is, right? Let me continue reading here. Concord was not a cheap failure. Analysts estimate Sony spent around $250 million on the game, only for it to sell so poorly that Sony shut it down 2 weeks after launch and shuttered its developer, Firewalk Studios, not long after. By contrast, Astrobot also launched last year to universal acclaim, winning multiple awards and selling 2.3 million copies as of March 2025, one of the best-selling games on PS5. The differences between the two games are myriad, certainly, and their development stories are quite different as well. But what Hulst has taken away from this is that there needs to be more supervision of Sony's own studios to ensure the games veering in the direction of Concord are spotted before they become expensive failures so they can be canceled and corrected in time. Again, go ahead.
But wasn't this said that Concord was Herman Hulst's baby?
What? I don't know if it was, but I wouldn't be surprised.
That's what somebody, some of the, you know, I don't know if it's fully confirmed, but somebody said that he was pushing Concord hard and said essentially that game was the future.
DC's or Fortnite.
So
I don't doubt it. Go ahead.
I'm like, you know, if anybody needs to go through some sort of change in thought, is him himself, if he was the cause of this problem.
Yeah, you know how it is.
There's an old saying when it comes to art and things that you create. Don't fucking fall in love with it.
Yeah, gotta have that distance, man. You know,
have that distance. Sit there and realize that you're running into a problem. And if it's a problem, crumble it up, throw that shit out.
Yeah,
That's the first thing that you learn as an artist. Like, don't fall in love with what you do. If you go in there and if it's not working out, don't try to sit there and fix it and, you know, wipe things out and do it. At some point, just tear it up and throw the fucking shit out. Start again.
For writing, there's a similar thing. It's called kill your darlings. Sometimes you got to kill your darlings. That idea that you love so much may not be so great, so you got to be willing to just chuck it and start over again if you need to. You know, go ahead, Chris. What are you going to say, bro?
Well, I mean, I agree with both. Like, both of you are right about that.
I agree with everything that's been said so far.
Well, here's the thing. Herman Hulst is not an artist, and let's not pretend that
he's not. He's a fucking...
here's, you know, let me slip my tinfoil hat on.
Uh-oh, let's go. Let's go, Carlos.
It's actually happening. So the reason that Concord was Hulst's darling is because he was courting all the ESG money from BlackRock, all these investors, right? He was looking for high ESG scores. That's why he was in love with Concord, because it ticked all those boxes where they would get maximum investment, right? So you can weather some failure, right? When you're getting like kind of dark money, right? Outside of customers, outside of us buying the game, you have investors putting in stuff because you're, I don't know, have representation and all this other shit. So that has all but, right, dried up. So yeah. Now everything has to pivot. So now all of a sudden Concord's not the darling. Oh, we made mistakes. Oh, this, you know, we should have seen this coming. No, you saw it and you wanted it and you invested in it because you are getting money to do so. And now that you, that money isn't there anymore and you actually have to be a business where you cater to your consumers, which is us, and we don't want that shit. Now you have to pivot, right? So that's all this is a giant pivot, and he's going to distance himself from it, pretend like, oh, who could have seen this happen, whatever. That you could bullshit everyone else. You could say that to investors and whatever. I'm sure some of them don't buy it, but I'm not buying it. This is, I could see what he's saying and see through it, and it's like, you had money coming in on the side, so you are catering to that instead of what we wanted, mm-hmm. right, as customers. And now that you can't do that anymore, that has been destroyed. And now there's no more ESG scores don't matter because you're not getting investment money for it. So now you have to make games the way you used to. You have to worry about the story, worry about what people want to play. And that's why he's pivoting. So don't believe this pivot. He Herman Hulse is as genuine as any of these other guys. They're not, right?
You know, Rick was loving this part of the, he's loving this part of the podcast. Yeah, keep talking that shit, niggas. Oh, man. And if Chris, if I could take that tinfoil hat for just a second. Sure. Yeah, this is what happens, you know, when that USAID money dries up. It's like, just throwing that out there, man.
Exactly.
This is what happens. Look at this fucking quote right here. We have since put in place much more rigorous and more frequent testing in many different ways. The advantage of every failure is that people now understand how necessary that oversight is. Yeah, yeah. You just came to this realization now when you ain't getting your fucking money. You know,
wait, Tony, did I read it correctly? I read.
Yo, did I have
need you more need, middle you need, managers?
You need the hat, bro.
no hat needed.
Yeah,
this is sounding like they need more middle managers.
Maybe they do. You know? You know, shout out to middle managers, man. You're not all bad.
We need you.
You know, oh man. Yeah,
gotta say PlayStation from itself
for real. But yeah, I don't have anything more. Herman was full of shit, bro.
Yeah, their strategy, it wasn't just the game. It was the entire strategy that they had, this live service strategy, yeah. Where they're just throwing shit at the wall.
Yo, we got 12 of these motherfuckers.
We got 14 of these motherfuckers. It's like, we got Jade Raymond in this bitch? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you see the guys, so like going back to like what Manny was saying, like he on the surface, yeah, he presents himself like that, and that advice is absolutely solid. Like, don't fall in love with the art, or you have to kill mm-hmm. your darling. Like, when things are going south, right, you have to abandon it. Same thing with any type of creative thing. Herman yeah. Hulse ain't no creative. He is a stone cold businessman, mm-hmm. and all he gives a shit about is the bottom line.
It's true.
That's all he cares about. So he championed Concord when that money was coming in, right? That side money's coming in. He's hitting his ESG marks. He welcomed that shit. You don't tell me they didn't have safeguards and checks and code reviews and all that stuff beforehand? Of course they did. They turned all that shit off. Why? Because there was investment reason to do so. So now that there isn't, they have to turn it back on.
Yeah. No, you're right. Ain't that something? All right. Let's move on here. Where are we? Okay, here we go. This one's kind of interesting. So we got PlayStation. They're releasing a Ghost of Yotei limited edition console, which, you know what my thoughts about the game. I'm kind of skeptical about the game, but this console looks nice. I'll give it that. You know,
it's a nice clean console. It has the look of I forgot what they call it. There's a special word for it in Japanese where it's, you know, like you see like the gold is kind of going through the white and everything. Yeah. And as I remember, like in like Japanese culture, they, when it comes to like things that get broken, they're not, at least in ancient times, they didn't want to fix it to the point where it, you know, you couldn't tell it wasn't fixed. So they would do stuff like inlay a crack with gold to essentially, you know, accentuate that error or that problem with it to essentially make it a bit more. So it's so you can see that it had a life.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Not the object. So it's sort of like the same, at least from what the way the console looks like, it kind of looks like that. It's sort of like that inlaid gold sort of like to fill in the shapes.
Yeah. It says here that it's supposed to represent like the girl's mask and shit because it's broken and it's got put together like that.
Her mask is broken and smashed, but it was fixed with gold.
Yeah.
Right?
So pretty cool. Obviously, I'm not going to be getting this because I'm good. But it looks nice. So...
I mean, the cool thing about this with the PlayStation 5 is you don't even need to buy the console to kind of do this.
The plates? Excuse me? That's pretty cool.
So you
can buy the plates and the controller and you're good to go.
Yeah, so there you go. Okay, that is good. That is good. All right, a couple things here. I want to talk about this. I don't know if we talked about this on the last show. I don't think we did. Apparently, there's a Capcom guy, Itsino, he did Dragon's Dogma, among other games. He's creating his own Japanese studio, and he's bringing in, like, big dogs from Cap, you know, more guys from Capcom that did Devil May Cry, Street Fighter. So that's pretty cool. And they said they specifically want to work on big Japanese AAA games. I'm like, okay, maybe they want to be their own version of Capcom, you know? Again, you know, like we said, especially in recent years, Capcom has been cooking. And we've seen what happens when Capcom developers go do their own thing. You should get some good stuff, you know. We had Clover Studio back in the day. Platinum had some guys from Capcom. So, you know, I think this is cool. We don't know when we're going to see our first game from these guys, but I'm definitely keeping my eye on it for sure. Have you guys been looking into this? Because I know there's been other stories, but I've only kind of seen some surface level stuff. But yeah, they said they want to make new games, not sequels. They want to make new games. Which is good.
Yeah, that's always a good thing. But I mean, the thing about it is that, like, you know, especially with when your teams get so big, it becomes more and more. And unfortunately, it becomes harder and harder to be able to go out into new territory. So the only way you're going to get what you want is if you do it for a really low price or do it for a lower price, you know, price tag. Kind of like the way old games were developed too, where they didn't have these extravagant budgets and stuff like that. It was a very sort of simple premise when it comes to them. So it seems like a lot of developers are, you know, a lot of well-known developers are all sort of striking out on their own again. And you have Hideki Kamiya, who essentially left Platinum Games to essentially create his own little studio, you know. Then they're open now, and then, you know, you have Toyama who made Silent Hill and those games. He struck out on his own too. I feel like we're gonna see a lot more of those sort of smaller type of studios trying to do the things that they want to do instead of just kind of constantly making established franchise, which kind of a big issue that we have right now.
Yeah, but yeah, no, again, we'll definitely keep. Apparently, they said a third of the studios, around 40 employees, come from Capcom. So good pedigree right there.
Yeah, they want to do their own thing, man. That's it. And they want to be a little bit more, you know, one thing about being, you know, having a smaller team, like a 30 person team, a 40 person, everybody, you know, I forgot how many, there's a mental number for how many, you know, people that you can remember. I heard
it's, oh, like it's 100, it's 130.
It's 130.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, at that point, you know, everybody, you know, 40 people, everybody gets and knows each other's names.
Yep.
Everybody, people can, you know, get their hands a little bit more in the weeds of things. I mean, that's the thing that I found at, you know, my game studio where it was, you know, everybody was, you know, could get, you know, could be involved with different portions of the aspect of creating games beyond their roles, their usual roles.
Yeah. Where everybody knows your name.
I mean, that's important. Like, just being able to go in and just being able to have, again, know everybody who's doing the things and be like, being able to give a suggestion and not being like, who the fuck is this guy? Who, this guy from marketing talking to me? What the hell is this shit?
Yeah, I know. Who?
Who's this?
Yeah. Yeah. And he even says that here too. It's like, you know, he doesn't regret working for Capcom, but it's like he doesn't just want to work on sequels for the rest of his career, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure he's had the same situation that happened to Kojima when he was, you know, at his point, the point that he sort of left, like in the interviews, he had said, like, you know, I, you know, if you want me to make other games, then tell Konami, you know?
Yeah.
I really want to make new games, but, you know, Metal Gear is the thing, and they want me to just make Metal Gear games.
Yeah. So there you go. All right, and the last story we're going to talk about before Manny tells us some stories about the Metal Gear Con. So the director of Final Fantasy XIV, he was doing an interview just about, you know, Final Fantasy XIV, but during it, he said something interesting. He says that, you know, maybe players don't really want or need next-gen console, which ties into a narrative we've been having this whole generation. Let me read this real quick. This is from IGN. Final Fantasy XIV director Naoki Yoshida, better known as Yoshi P, says players may not need a PS6 or a new Xbox console anytime soon. Speaking with Feed4 Gamers, Yoshida was asked whether Final Fantasy XIV would eventually come to future consoles. He goes, of course, there's always the possibility of providing our games on those platforms. He said his main goal is to make the game available to as many people as possible. He says recent hardware makes that easier thanks to stronger specs. Then he says, so I don't think any addition of hardware is a negative in that regard. Still, when looking at things as a player, he feels there's little need for brand new machines. At this point in time, people are happy with the Xbox Series X, PS5, and Nintendo Switch 2. Then he says, and honestly, from a gamer's perspective as well, hardware is just expensive to buy. Yup. There's no official word yet on the next console, blah, 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 blah. What do you guys think about that? That, you know, some player, I kind of agree with this, especially since this console generation hasn't started yet. You know, it's like, it's just been like it's moving, but the engine hasn't revved up yet. So, you know, we were talking about that. It's like potentially getting a PS6 in 2027 when this console generation hasn't really started yet. You know, and you know what's going to happen when we get these new systems. We're not going to see a massive jump in, like, graphics and performance, right? So, because we've been seeing diminishing returns for a while now. So, you know, yeah, what do you think about that, Carlos? Because I kind of, from that perspective, I'm like, I kind of understand. Like, obviously, we all want new consoles, but if there's really nothing to play on these things that you can't play on your current shit, what's the point?
Two things. The first one, the handheld portion of it is going to excite people.
Yeah.
Just because of the nature. Like, think about it. You got PlayStation, a really, really large and loyal PlayStation fan base.
Your J-Ship.
Still hasn't been... shout out to J-Ship. Loyal fan base that still hasn't been sort of introduced officially. The portal doesn't really count.
No.
But to handhelds, like to the handheld market. They're gonna buy those handhelds. A lot of them will. So that's one, and that'll get people going. Number two, GTA 6 is just around the corner. It's going to come out. Some people say 2026. Who knows? But we were right. It got delayed. Who could have thought? So 2026, if it releases 2026, that's still going to be maybe a little bit more than a year than the PlayStation 6's release. So that game is still going to be fresh, still going to be in people's minds, and people are still going to be playing it. And it's going to be the first thing that they're going to announce, the first game they'll announce on the PlayStation 6's press conference. So, you know, these types of games are going to be heavily, you know, presented in those types of environments. And also, all the games that played in this generation that, you know, maybe are going to get upgrades, just like how they did the last two generations. Oh, there's remasters and remasters, or maybe the remastering engine is going to come out. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it's not going to be new games.
No, that is a good point. It's like the only thing that's exciting is the handhelds, you know, even though they're not as powerful as a console or a PC. It is still cool to play games at that level, wherever you want. But yeah, man, again, Carlos, I've just been jaded by this generation, bro. You know, I don't really expect much from next gen.
Yeah, I don't even know if Mark Cerny can save this.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't think so.
Where's Knack 4?
So, yeah, we'll, you know, again, very interesting quote there. I would have disagreed with him 10 years ago, but now I kind of see where he's coming. Like, this generation, man, it's been a struggle.
I would have agreed with him 10 years ago.
You would have agreed with him. There you go. I would have been like, what? New consoles? New consoles are great. But, yeah, whatever. All right, man. Manny, you went to Metal Gear Con. Tell us about your experience.
So yeah, it was so earlier this year I was invited to MGSCon as part of their Kickstarter. So for those who don't know, MGSCon is a fully fan funded Metal Gear Solid convention that happens in California, and they had been at it for 3 years. I was actually invited to go to the original one, but I unfortunately couldn't make it to that one. So, you know, cut to, you know, 3 years later, and they asked me again, and, you know, just the right, you know, right things fell into position for me to go. And they had a successful Kickstarter. And so, you know, this, the end of the summer, they had their little convention. I think it sold out. I think they had over 1,000 people there, which is a pretty damn good. And yeah, I mean, you know, sold my stuff, did a bunch of firsts for a convention. Number one, this is the first year that my table is fully Metal Gear, as opposed to it being maybe one or two prints that I've had that are Metal Gear related. I resurrected the old Solid Zero Subsistence book, which is the full art book of all of my art, like Metal Gear artwork that I've drawn over the years. So I retired in like 2019. So it came, so, you know, I figured it'd be a kind of a, you know, a nice time to bring it back. And then also it has, it was a special con exclusive version of, which had a nice little belly band and a couple of inside of it. Yeah. And it was a good show. Like a lot of really great, got to meet a lot of people. I actually had a fucking line to my table.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty nice.
Mrs. Superstar over here.
Never had that before. I mean, usually it's like, you know, I get a couple of passerbys, maybe a couple of people pile up in front of the thing. No, there was a little line that went up there. I mean, there was another artist who's also very big in the Metal Gear community, which is like a shibi artist. Her name is Maddie, and she works for, Grasshopper Manufacturer.
Oh, nice.
Actually. So she's done some works with them. So, but yeah, it was a really great show. I got to meet, a few years ago, I actually made a deal with a couple of voice actors from the Metal Gear games to offer one of my pieces as content for them to have signed, you know, for people to get to sign. So one of them is Cam Clark, the voice of Liquid Snake. So I have this cool propaganda poster, like Liquid Snake wants you for the Genome Army kind of thing, dealy. And I got to meet him a few, I proposed it to him at another convention years ago. And then finally he, you know, hit me up and it's like, hey, you know, I have this piece and I really want to use, how can we get this to go? And then another one later on, which was Paul Eiding, the voice of Colonel Campbell. And he was I actually never talked to him specifically. He found me like through my Redbubble and my Twitter. So he contacted me through there and he's like, oh man, I really like this AI Colonel piece you did, and I'd love to have that as one of the things to have signed. So we set that up and I got to meet Paul this year and shoot the shit with him. Super nice guy. I know Paul, like, you know, if you're OG like me, Chris, and Tony, Paul Eiding is not, you know, if you know the Metal Gear games and you know some of the voices that are in it, you will know that a lot of the voices that are in Metal Gear are all in Transformers and in G.I. Joe.
Yep.
So Paul Eiding, for your OGs out there, he is the voice of Perceptor from Transformers. Michael Bell is, you know, who is the voice of the Fear. He is the voice of Duke from G.I. Joe.
Nice.
And then they also had the voice of Vulgan. He is the voice of Shipwreck from G.I. Joe, as well as a bunch of Transformers. So you literally have all these kind of like the connection of the OG and the new kind of in one game kind of thing. So it was cool out there to, you know, be out there. My friend Ruby, Ruby Taki, who's a very great cosplayer, was out there, and her husband had created this really cool booth that it's like a photo booth that looks like an environment from the game. Kind of like the little booth that the little diorama that you get for the collector's edition that just released, and you can take photos inside it. It was a really cool little thing that did. And the other cool thing about Ruby is that she was actually paid by Konami to make the boss's uniform for the actress Lori Allen.
Oh, wow.
Lori Allen is the voice of the boss. So for the, like, if you went to the New York event, the Metal Gear in New York event, at one point Lori Allen was there all in her boss gear. And this was the first time that Ruby had ever, she's used to making costumes for herself. So it was really cool to, you know, finally actually made a costume for somebody else. And she was all nervous and stuff, yeah. But it was a cool thing. Yeah, I got to do, a little talk to talk about, you know, they got a couple of us artists out there to sort of talk about stuff. We had Mitch, who's an artist from Australia, from New Zealand, and he's working on his own little Metal Gear, like animated movie almost. So every so often.
Well, Konami doesn't shut that shit down.
It's been slowly but surely. He's been just uploading different parts of it. Who knows what happened, but it's just little bits and pieces. I think he's probably doing a little short of it, but he's been, you know, for a while now. It's a really well done, you know, the footage that he has created, it all looks really good. You know, he's a one man army on that stuff. Nice. I'm like, dude, I've been talking to him for a very long time. So really cool to actually meet him in person. And when I first came into the Artist Alley, because obviously I post, you know, people sort of know what I look like. You know, I post pictures of myself on my Instagram and Twitter. So you kind of get an idea who this guy is. So he sort of did this one thing. He's like, hey, he's like, you know who I am, right? I'm like, Mitch, is that? And he's like, yes, it's me. He's got that New Zealand accent. So he came from far. Yeah. He came from far for the convention. And then there's also a lot of other people that I know from just doing conventions. In fact, one guy, and Riku knows this guy. He drew one of Riku's images.
Oh, that's cool.
He's a really cool dude. I'm blanking on his name right now, but I've seen him multiple times. He's done the New York shows and stuff like that. He's a really talented artist, and he was there. It's good to catch up with him. And also, get to talk to some of the other artists that were sort of jumping around in there. I met quite a bit of people that had really amazing. So it was a really great show. And another thing that happened out there. So I decided to stay a little bit longer than just cut out on Monday right away, because I don't fully know, at least at the time, I didn't fully know how well I would do at the show at a full Metal Gear Con that's only one day long. Usually, a few days long, you know, I think I'm going to do okay. So I gave myself a lot of time on Monday to sort of just go out and, you know, do some things, just in case I had to ship a bunch of boxes back, which, by the way, I had shipped over a massive box of t-shirts and two like medium sized 31 pound boxes of books. I was only down to one box from all that stuff. So I did a pretty good job. But anyway, I gave myself a lot of time. So I was going to probably leave. I was going to leave like later, you know, on Monday. But on Sunday, Ruby was going to be doing a photo shoot with Lori Allen, who's the voice of the boss, because they didn't actually get to do any sort of pictures with her because it just didn't happen. So I just stuck around and I helped her out. I got to, you know, talk with Lori and, you know, help direct a couple shots that they took. And so that shot is actually up right now of Lori with the Philosopher's Legacy, nice. her boss outfit. Cool thing about the Philosopher's Legacy that she holds in her hand is it's actually fan made. A guy named Tim, who runs the Metal Gear Con, he actually gave a bunch of people like this little Philosopher's Legacy that like prop. That he gave it to a bunch of the voice actors. He gave it to people who were involved with the show originally. So, you know, a bunch of people got it. So Lori's husband was like, he comes over to me and he's like, hey, do you know what this thing is? And I'm like, oh, because here's the thing. One thing to understand about voice actors is that voice acting is you don't get to be fully connected with the role that you play. Unlike, you know, like David Hayter, who actually played the games, he can answer questions. He knows everything about his character. For somebody like a Lori Allen or a lot of the voice actors, you are just doing pieces of a role and then it's sort of constructed in editing. Yeah. So like they'll be like, okay, can you give me a line where you read a little bit more serious and then you do, you know, you go up and be a little bit more happy. And that's the way they sort of do it. So you're essentially hitting marks. that the voice director is looking for, as opposed to fully doing like an acting role, like, you know, the words where you're fully making decisions. So Lori doesn't have that much history on it, neither did her. And I told her what it was. I told them what it was, what is essentially the MacGuffin of Metal Gear Solid 3, right? Yeah. You know, everybody's trying to get this philosopher's legacy. And the important thing about the one that Tim had made is that the microfilm actually features the maps from, you know, the con maps from Metal Gear Con, the most recent one.
Oh, that's fun.
So he made all these little tiny things. I don't know how many. I'd have to ask him how many of those things he made. But he made them all for all the voice actors, which they had the whole cast of Metal Gear Solid 3, with the exception of, I guess, the end. But they had a bunch of the voice actors from there. So, like, if you went, you got the most complete, like, signing if you wanted to do a signing for. And I had ideas, like, because when he brought it over to me and I explained it, I'm like, you know, this would be a really great, you know, prop to be used for this photo shoot. So, you know, we used it in the photo shoot, and it's in the photo shoot, which is also kind of a cool thing, because everything that Lori has on her in that shot is fan created. Like, from the outfit that was made by Ruby, even though she was paid by Konami, it is a fan created thing. And so is that Philosopher's Legacy, which is a gift from a fan. And I feel like that had a lot of meaning, you know, in general, because it's like, you know, for years since Metal Gear had been, you know, and, you know, the way it is, it hasn't been a thing in years. Who's been keeping it alive?
The fans.
The fans. So it's fitting that she's literally for the time that it took to finally get back to these games again. The fans in that time, these savvy kids were able to pull together a fucking full con of fully funded by the fans three times in a row. You know. It means a lot. So yeah. I felt like that was one of the reasons why I also wanted it. And again, really nice to meet them. And again, we had Ruby and her husband and our photographer, you know, who's also a really big Kojima / you know, Metal Gear fan, all there sort of helping out to get these really cool shots done. So it was a really good time. It's unfortunate that this is at least going to be the last Metal Gear Con for a little bit, because Amanda, who runs the show, who's like the head of the show, it's a lot of work for her, you know, like to you know, imagine putting together a whole damn con, you know, yeah, and having crazy to do that. And she's a mom. She's got a few kids, you know, she's a full-time mom. So I could see why she would want to take a little bit of a break and then regroup and maybe, you know, in a year or two.
That's so cool.
That's good stuff. I mean, it's very cool to be at a very sort of focused sort of con, as opposed to just, you know, everything in the kitchen sink con.
Yeah, like a New York Comic Con, which is everything.
Like a New York Comic Con. Yeah, which is just everything. It's general nerd con, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, because even like an anime con is like a lot of different anime things. It's not focused.
Yes. There's no, like, there are specific cons that are like, there's the Morpher Con, right? Which is literally the Power Rangers, you know, con.
Yeah.
So it's very much sort of focused on the Power Rangers. So yeah, this was sort of, or what was it? The Gargoyles Gathering?
Yeah, convention? Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That had been around for years. So yeah, it's that same sort of idea. But it was very cool. They had their shit together, and it was definitely the biggest that they've been since, you know, in the second con, they literally had they maxed out the amount of people that they could have in a space. Kind of like the way New York Comic Con did that first
That's
year.
That's right, remember? Yeah.
Years ago, like they had that one little tiny corner of the bottom level of the Jacob Javits Center, and they literally had to, like, the fire marshal had to get in there and be like, all right, we can only have this certain amount of people in here. So yeah, it's the same sort of idea. So they, you know, I mean, granted they sold a bunch of tickets and they got a lot of people in, but it never felt like mob.
Yeah.
Like, it was a good amount of people.
That's good. All right, man. Thank you for that. Sounds pretty awesome. And hopefully they'll, you know, return someday.
Let the legend come back, as they say. There you go. Ocelot, right?
Cool. All right, man. Good stuff there. Let's start wrapping things up. Manny, do you have anything else you want to plug?
Well, I mean, right now, you know, there's a Power Rangers Prime, which is out, Prime number 9, which I did the full cover of. It's out on the streets right now. Casey Jones, you know, TMNT Journeys number 2, that's going to be coming out very soon. We got our Street Sharks cover that's out on the streets. There's still a few more things in the barrel, not to mention TMNT Battle Nexus, which has the 2003 Turtles that I worked on versus the following 2012 one. A lot of fans have been looking forward to that stuff. So Kari have a cover with one of the creators of a jam cover with one of the creators of that show. So keep an eye out for that. That thing's coming real soon. So it's gonna be cool to see all. Already the fans are all getting into it, like, oh man, 2003 is gonna kick the 2012's ass.
Oh, no. Relax, guys, relax.
You know? Yeah, it's all getting all crazy like that. So, but it's, you know, it's all in good fun. You know, I always say this, when it comes to Ninja Turtles, every single generation has their own. You know, a lot of us on the show, ours is the 80s, yeah. 90s, 88 Turtles.
Yeah, but even though that, the 2003 one is better.
So, you know, everybody has their own generation of turtles, and every single time it gets, you know, brought back again, there's a new generation of fans. It's very sort of weird. It's ironically evergreen.
Pun intended.
pun definitely intended. Yeah. So yeah, so it's, you know, it's good to see all that sort of stuff. So yeah. Yeah, that's all I got going on.
Yeah. So this isn't a plug for anything I'm doing, but I want to get it out there because we're talking about Ninja Turtles. They actually extended the run of the 35th anniversary for another week. If you have never seen this in theaters or you've never seen this movie, please go see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 35th Anniversary Edition. I went to see it a couple weeks ago with the homie Jeffrey. We had a blast. The movie is still fucking awesome. You know, and it's crazy because I probably haven't seen it in like 30 years, but I still remembered everything. That's how like much of an impact that movie made on me. So do yourself a favor, go check that out. And also on Amazon right now, because every time they release these 35th anniversary or whatever, there's always a 4K, you know. So they're actually releasing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles trilogy. I'm going to call it duology. You don't need to watch three. Three is horrible, horrible fucking movie. But right now, so it's typically $95 at Amazon, but they reduced it by 32% pre-order. I'm pre-ordering this shit right now, you know. And also, they're re-releasing Secret of the Ooze next March. Not as good as the first one, admittedly, but still fun. You know, ninja, rap, go. You know, it's still fun. There's some stupid stuff too. Babies! They're babies! But the first one is still amazing, you know? In a half shell, they're the heroes four. In this day and age, who could ask for more? The muggings are high, the crime rate mysterious. All the police and detectives are furious. Oh, so good, man. So good. All right. And Carlos, what's going on with the coalition, man? Oh, you may be.
Yo,
going,
man.
You guys doing Walking Dead or anything crazy like that?
So, yeah, we're getting ready. Walking Dead is coming back. In particular, the Daryl Dixon show.
Daryl Dixon.
Which should be back. Let me see when it's back. In a couple of weeks, I think. Stay tuned for a couple of weeks on the Coalition on YouTube, where we can, where we're going to be covering the Daryl Dixon show, and it's it doesn't have the nuke, but it should. So yeah, Mr. Richard Bailey Jr., Adam Vale, myself, we're going to be covering it. Daryl Dixon is probably our favorite of the spinoffs, so you know it's going to be good. And yeah, and shout out to Rich. He's been
Yes.
Pumping up all these videos on Coalition Gaming, Shinobi, Gears of War. He's doing all of them. Shout out to Rich. He's grinding, man. And he's in Seattle. Mr. Worldwide.
You know, yeah, crazy. He is Worldwide Rich. And obviously, you know, shout out to Adam, TV Terminal. Go check that out over on the YouTubes. Those guys are always pumping out like a bunch of episodes. So make sure you support them. The channel's doing very, very well. So if you like TV stuff, Adam and his brother got you covered, you know? All right. Oh, by the way, so the pricing for the 4K Ninja Turtles set is $70. So it's still the same kind of deal. Because the one I was looking at was a Blu-ray. You want that 4K, you know? I will definitely be buying this, but I'm not going to watch that. That third movie was so fucking bad, man. You know, like, I'm not going to get it. It's fucking upsetting. But that was the thing with a lot of movies in that era. It's like, by the time you get to the third one, you're like, oh, God, what are we doing? Remember RoboCop 3? You know, that was trash. Alien 3 had some good stuff, but, you know, it wasn't the same. Terminator 3, even though fucking Terminator 3, that movie's a fucking masterpiece compared to all the shit that came out recently, you know? And Terminator 3 is bad. Jesus. I remember when I was recommending old movies to Riku, the running theme was like, stop with the second one, you know? Predator as well, stop with the second one. You're good. Yeah.
Alien stuff.
Aliens.
To be fair, if they stopped with Avengers 2, that it would have been the worst one. So that's good they kept on for two more.
Yeah, but you know, MCU operates by its own rules, you know? Because it's like, you know, with the Captain America movies, it's like, if you try to watch them just on their own, they wouldn't make any fucking sense, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because you need like 50 other movies and shit.
Yeah. Did you mention Superman as well?
We did too. Like, Riku, you stop after two, you're good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Batman, the best one.
Batman for a while too. It was like, stop with the second one, the Tim Burton ones, you know, but then we got Joel Schumacher after that. Even though there was some kind of fun with the first Joel Schumacher one, I think I just like Nicole Kidman in that, to be honest.
Yeah, and if later on if you want to get the Mr. Freeze memes, then do that. But
yeah. Although, to be honest, you really want to watch Batman. It was Forever, right? Batman Forever for Seal, my man. You know? That's the most epic fucking... I still listen to that fucking song, man. You hear shit, man? So good.
Baby Tower.
Tower in the sea. My power, my pleasure, my pain.
My pain, baby.
I'm going to play that shit after this show, man.
You know, that song was not made for that film.
It was just like for one of his albums, wasn't it?
It was for his album. Yeah. That was it.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure somebody heard it. Yo, that shit's hot. Put it in the soundtrack.
Also, fun fact, it wasn't made by an actual SEAL.
It was not. That soundtrack was interesting. Remember they had that Red Man song about the Riddler? The Riddler! Crazy, man. All right, man. So wrapping up here. So make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Subscribe to us on YouTube, join the Discord, and check us out on your favorite podcast app. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Okay, everyone.
Carlos Romero.
A shout out to Seal. It's Britain's second favorite export to the world.
Yeah, and our favorite export to the world. Brian Manjoma.
To be honest, it was a toss-up between the Queen and James Bond.
All right, guys. We'll see you on Sunday. Later.